Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Ham Nation is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This episode of Ham Nation is brought to you by ProXPN. ProXPN is a virtual private network that allows you to use the internet the way it should be, anonymously and without oversight. For 20% off the new account, please go to proxpn.com/twit and use the code HN20. This episode is brought to you by ICOM. For more information, please visit icomamerica.com/hamnation. This is Ham Nation, episode number 110, August 14th, 2013. Bob shows how to connect your scope to your transmitter. Hello, everybody. From Pleasant Hope, Missouri, in the Ozarks, it's hot time for Ham Nation. And I've been hamming all day, but having a big time on the air. This is K9EID. I'm Bob Heil, and I'm glad you found us. We hope that you're going to stick around because we got a lot of stuff tonight. Lots of stuff. We're going to be talking about this thing, and we're going to be talking about lots of stuff. But before we do all that, we have to tell you we got lots of people with us. Gordon West, the ultimate teacher and the ultimate teacher's teacher from Costa Mesa, back from Albuquerque. How are you?
1,900 miles later, we are just great. Yeah, great to be back, Bob. We have the amateur television network over my either left or right shoulder, whichever it is, and we're ready for you, Bob. Go ahead.
All right. Well, we're glad to have you back. Tried to catch up with you last week, but I never could hear you. But I think that's because your signal was being all sucked up by George's big antenna down in Mississippi. George, are you with us tonight? It's always good to have the smoke and solder happening. How's it going?
Actually, Bob, we only have Gordo, Dale, and Don with us right now.
Oh, okay. Well, he'll be back. I know what he's doing. George is firing up his soldering iron because he's going to do a really good test tonight. So we want to come back and see what he's got going. Dale, how you doing out in Wichita?
Hey, doing real good, Bob. Had some fun last night. I got the JBL monitor speakers in, like you were talking about a couple of weeks ago, and got one of them hooked up. So we're having some fun, I think, here pretty quick here this evening. And we've got some good videos tonight also, Bob. Go.
Yeah, I saw a few of those. They're just fabulous. Well, that's great. Well, we've had a big week here in Springfield. Don Wilbanks is with us, and I know he's going to love what's coming up here. Don, you're a car freak, aren't you?
Yeah, I am. I've got an old Jeep, a 2000 model Jeep, and I've got a 78 Smokey and the Bandit Trans Am. So, yeah, I'm an old car guy. What you got going, Bob?
Well, it was, check it out. It was the Route 66 Festival in Springfield. And, you know, this is the birthplace of Route 66. And I'm telling you, it was way too much fun. Do you have some of those slides that I sent late here? I hope I got to you. Yeah, there you go. This is a cool thing. I'll run through these real quick. The birthplace of Route 66 is Springfield, Missouri, and they have a museum here. Look at some of the crazy stuff you see.
Studebaker, isn't it?
What's cool about this is you see these running around the streets here in Springfield all the time. It's like, where do you guys get this stuff? Will they build it? And I just had such a good time this week. And if anybody ever gets through Springfield, you'll see what I mean. We've had a really fun weekend with them. We're trying to get the Route 66 guys together. You know, in September, they have a ham radio special event. And we'll keep you posted on this because this is a fun, fun thing. Gordon, do you work the Route 66? I'm sure you do.
We actually drove on Route 66, as you'll see in a few. And yes, when they have the Route 66 operators, you bet we try and work them all.
Oh, that's great. And when we left California a few years ago, Sarah and I did that trip and as much as we could back to Illinois. It was really fun. So,
you know, I grew up in Oklahoma City. I grew up in Oklahoma City. Yeah. Route 66 goes right through Oklahoma City. So, yeah, I'm very familiar with Route 66.
Right through the middle of it. You got it. You got it. Well, we got to make sure that everybody knows what's going on with you, Don. You're going to be in Huntsville, you and George, this week. And Huntsville has a big deal coming up Friday and Saturday, right?
That's right. Well, Saturday and Sunday, yeah, it's the Huntsville Ham Fest, and it's the Young Ham of the Year Award, where Padre Glissandru, KC9UUS, I believe is his call sign. I'd have to look that up real quick, but yeah, we're going to award the Young Ham of the Year Award to him, and it's kind of an anniversary of sorts, because it was 20 years ago in 1993 that the Young Ham of the Year Award was first presented in Huntsville. Now, they took a year off in 94, but from 95 until now, it's been every year. So it's kind of, it's almost the 20th, I guess, 20th with an asterisk anniversary of the Huntsville Ham Fest and the Young Ham of the Year. And it's been a marriage made in heaven, and we're awfully proud to have Huntsville as our home.
Well, I'm really glad that you're going to be there. Sorry, I can't make it, but that's the way it goes. Too much going on at one time. Hey, Gordo, tell us about this great trip that you and Suze did. It sounded like it was a lot of fun, and you got some pictures. So let's see what you were doing there for a few days.
Well, we were driving for an entire week, and we started with a rental car. And Brian, here's the tone. Go ahead and roll that first one. Our destination was the Albuquerque Duke City Ham Fest. And let me tell you, Kay Craigie, president of the American Radio Relay League, was there as well. And as we got ready, we're going to take along our ICOM 706 and the Ham Source battery monitor and that lithium iron lightweight buffer battery, so we could run off of the 12 volts off the battery, powered off the car's 12 volts. And our antenna of choice was the Outbacker three-piece that fits in the trunk for safety at night. And that's the Diamond K400 mount that accepts the 3H24 thread. We put it on the little rent-a-car, and wherever we went, the people would go, "What is that on your rent-a-car?" And let me tell you, we'd make contact every single day and evening on 40 meters. In fact, checking into the net last week. And we routed the wires to both the VHF-UHF mag mount and the HF antenna through the door. And it squashes them a little bit, probably upsets the SWR a bit, but there's no problem. And again, it's a rental car, so who cares? Well, we had to make sure we couldn't tell afterwards. And on the rental car dashboard, we started squawking APRS. But when we started squawking, we were so far out of town that I know in the chat room you're trying to watch us, but we were long gone from civilization. But that's the Kenwood D72, and that's the ABMAP. And Don Arnold really got us going on the ABMAP, so we can see where everyone else is around us. It is bidirectional. We had to dodge a few storms on the way, and thanks to the 2 meters and the 440 band, the local hams, wherever he went, would keep us in touch and tell us which way to stay away from these big thunderheads. And when we finally got to Albuquerque that next morning, there they go, all the Albuquerque balloons. But the big balloon that we were most interested in is the one on Saturday morning that they launched. And these are high school kids that put them in orbit. And there is our balloon tracking. Now, remember at Albuquerque, beside being at a new venue at Hotel Albuquerque in the Old Town District, they had concurrent forums, five of them going on. Kay Craigie was there. They had all sorts of inside exhibits. RT Systems was there. Flex Radio, DZ Kit, Wiredcom, Aero Antennas, Austin Amateur Radio Supply, Dick Hammerschlag with all his stuff. The Loop, QRP Works, 10 different ham clubs. And when you come back to me, we're going to show you what one of the vendors, Ham Crazy, laid on us. But here we are tracking the balloon. and we're monitoring exactly where it is in the sky via APRS. And the kids launched it. How high did that balloon get? Well, a lot higher than this antenna. This is how high the balloon got, 76,000 feet, and it added 10 more thousand before it finally burst and came back down. And by the way, when these balloons come down, it's 1.5 hours up, 35 minutes down, and that 90,000 to 30,000 is called a wild ride. And the kids were all watching APRS as the balloon was going up, ascending, and then descending. So the balloon launch was a big deal, and they had a great reception afterwards, and we'll show you some of the balloon payload in just a moment. We're also introducing our ham radio for instructors, and we had a big take-up on that, and we'll tell you more about that. But there were plenty of instructors and ham tests and ham classes going on during the great Albuquerque Duke City Ham Fest. And you can see, local knowledge. You get on the 2-meter band and you find out what's happening. Ham says, no, you go beyond there, up a little bit, and there's the hot springs. So here we are in Tonopah, and this is the Tonopah Hot Springs, actually the El Dorado Hot Springs. And for those looking for a hot soaking after a long day of hamming, they've got it. Natural water, 120 degrees, cool down to about 110 degrees, and you gingerly get in and you can soak. But again, we found out about all this through local ham. So I encourage all of you, always taking along a 2-meter radio. Well, it was censored. It was clothing optional. Thank you, Brian, for that shot. But again, here's how we stayed on the air. We had the 2-meter 440 side of the ICOM 706, the HF. You see the battery down there, and that's acting as the buffer. And it worked out very well. There's Kay Craigie, who gave the keynote speech on Saturday night, representing the American Radio Relay League. And she invited all Ham Nation viewers to be sure and show up at the centennial celebration next year back at league headquarters. Here's some of the payload, and some of the payload that they had was a crossband repeater, APRS. The payload on the balloon that got to 90,000 feet had still cameras, live amateur radio TV, so we could watch it going up and coming back down, 1 gigabyte of inertial measurements, including temperature, and allowed us to track the balloon as it made its ascent to about 90,000 feet. It did not miss a beat on APRS. And there's its little, let's see, that's the amateur television 426 megahertz antenna. And the balloon did a fabulous job. And when it finally burst, and this is the actual balloon after it came back down, it went up to 90,000 feet. And the best part of it is part of the Near Space Balloon Project that involves kids. And they say kids learn more with hands-on sensory experience. And boy, they sure got it with this balloon experiment. And to learn more about this Albuquerque balloon event that took ham radio aloft, go to www.ansr, Alpha November Sierra Roger.org, and you'll get the full information about the payload. And look at how the kids, and these are high school kids, have built a lot of this technology. And it really was a hands-on experience. A little humor there. Little spaceman went up as well. And again, almost all of the data coming back was on ham radio. So take a look at the webpage that Brian has got up there. And I think you'll be really pleased to see how kids are getting an inroad into ham radio through instructors, getting them something that's really exciting. And thanks to Craig Smith and Holly Smith. Look at this. They have a group called Ham Crazy.com, and they'll make you your own amateur radio FCC type of license plaque. And it was so great to meet them there and be able to get a copy of that and get the actual original of the FCC license plaque and a whole bunch of other things as well. So we'd sure like to thank the folks that put on the Albuquerque Ham Fest. Great job. It was a brand new venue. And I encourage all of you in ham radio, to get a chance when you go mobile, always take 2 meters and 440, because wherever we went, we would have ham say, "Oh, Gordo, Sue, stop by, see this place or that place." And we'd turn left and we'd turn right. And thanks to ham radio, we found some places we never would have seen or dropped in on or bathed in if it weren't for ham radio and going mobile. So, Bob, that's the story. And now back to you from Albuquerque, New Mexico, back home.
That was great. That was really great. And I'm sure you had a good time. I'm sorry that we didn't get to hook up while you were out there mobile, but conditions wouldn't allow. But we'll catch up again when you're out there running around. Well, I've been sitting here, by the way, reading my new copy of Electric Radio. Did you guys get your Electric Radio yet? I'm telling you, it's the best thing that I get. And you really need to get a hold of this particular copy. Our good friend George W1LSB, he's been on a couple times, did a fabulous article in here about Wes Shum and some of the early things about single sideband. Oh, gosh, it's really good. And it just furthers the whole situation of what's going on. He had space in this one place. Look at the picture he puts in here. George, you could have done better. I mean, of course, he's got my lovely Sarah in there, but he didn't need me in there. But anyway, please, everybody, check it out, Electric Radio. You can find them on the net, but call us, guys. Get involved in that magazine. It's so good. And some of the things that we see in there, I am here to tell you about tonight. I get a lot of guys ask me, how do I use an oscilloscope? And we're going to start doing a few things. George and I have been talking about this. But to start off, you have to figure out, how do you use it? Well, here's a couple of slides before we get into it that to show you the equipment you can buy, such as a Kenwood, Yaesu, Heathkit, any of those guys will have us with all the things we need. You just plug it in and go. So, Brian, crank up that first set and let's see what we got. That's one you see behind me a lot. Now, that was, gosh, 1958 I built that. And that's wonderful because the situation we have with it and this Kenwood, they're all set up to do this already. So what you got to do is figure out a way to do what they do. This is the back of the Kenwood scope. And then this is the back of the Central Electronics. What do you see? You see all of the ways that they have RF sampled the exciter on one side, the final on another. So we're going to be able to hook up gear, as you see in this diagram, how to hook up an amplifier, how to hook up just your exciter, and they even have a two-tone generator in it that you can plug it into your mic connector and get a two-tone generator going two tones. And we'll get into this in weeks to come as to why you need all of this. But that's the way to hook it up. Well, what happens if you don't have it? Well, you have to build a little box. And here's a little box, no big deal. And inside that box, I just took a piece of RG8 coax and ran it from one to the other. No problem. And then we sample, we pick off of that a couple of resistors in a little pad so that this T-pad allows us a pickoff point of the RF voltage and then couple it into the RCA jack. And here's the simple diagram of it. It is so simple. It takes two resistors and the T-pad and a 0.02 capacitor. That's it. And that output goes to your scope. And then, of course, the transmitter and the antenna, that just goes straight through, as you saw. And what's so neat about this is that we can see is this is a Tektronix scope, no big deal. You can go out and find any kind of scope. Now, what you're seeing there is a bad signal. I'm overmodulating. And there is a pretty signal, and I'm almost close to modulating it perfectly. But those are the kind of things that you see when you put all these things together. There it is installed in the system. The coax goes straight through onto the antenna, and the pickoff point comes out of the top to the scope. It's that simple. So now we're able to use these scopes. And you can find a lot of them. I mean, almost every Hamfest I've been to lately, they got all kinds of scopes, and eBay's full of them. The situation is they have scopes. You'll see a 20-meg scope or a 50-meg scope or a 200-meg, exactly what it means. If you want to look at your 6-meter transmitter, you better get a scope that does at least 50 megs or 100 megs. But for just every day running around on 75, 40, 20, you can get some of the most of my scopes are over 100, but you don't need that. That's the deal, that they only go so high in frequency to give you good resolution and an honest report. But please look around for some scopes. You'll have fun because there's so many other things you can do with an oscilloscope. And it's very simple because it boils down to this little box. And every one of you that are watching us tonight and listening to us, every one of you can build this thing. It is so simple. And this is, another easy way to get into this hobby. And start playing around, building things, making them work, and figuring out, whoa, I can do this. And I would be lost without my oscilloscopes. I would be lost. I really would. It's the way you tune up a final amplifier. It's the way that you set the carrier balance and stuff on my old single sideband stuff. So check it out. Oscilloscopes are great, and I know that you'll have fun putting all these things together, and it's just a lot of fun to do these things, and the scope is very useful in a lot of other things, so we'll get into that as we move along. Well, Don has got some words tonight about our new sponsor, so Don, are you ready to fly down there with the new pro?
I am, as a matter of fact. You know, more than ever right now, your online freedom and your privacy are under threat. I mean, like you wouldn't believe. Governments, the ISP, seems like everybody wants to control what you can and cannot see on the internet, and they keep a record of everything you do, plus the free Wi-Fi that you get at this coffee house, the hotel, the airport. You go to these ham fests and stuff. It puts you at risk because your passwords and your sensitive data are all in the clear. It can all be intercepted more easily than you might think. Well, there's a product called ProXPN. It's a global VPN. That is a virtual private network. You probably have a VPN at work. In fact, I'm sure you do. Well, this is your own VPN, and it works with almost any internet connection, creates a secure encrypted tunnel. All of your online data passes back and forth through that tunnel. Any online application can work with ProXPN, including your web browser, your email, file sharing, instant messaging. Doesn't matter what it is. If it goes through the internet, ProXPN can keep it on hidden online from prying eyes. It disguises your physical location. It gives you unfettered access to any website or online service, no matter where you live or where you travel to. Now, here's the important thing. Online privacy, it's a 512-bit encrypted tunnel. Works via OpenVPN or PPTP. You choose, your choice. Protect yourself against the ISP six strikes rule. You can bypass internet filtering and blocked websites, bypass geographical restrictions for internet content and online video with worldwide servers in the US, UK, Asia, and elsewhere. ProXPN software works for Windows and Mac. Gives you advanced controls. It allows you to do all manner of things, like selecting the programs and ports you want to anonymously route through ProXPN servers. It works with your iOS, your Android device, allows you to use your own data plan or your public or corporate Wi-Fi with complete and total privacy on the go and world-class customer support if you ever have a problem. Steve Gibson gave it a great review on Security Now right here on the TWIT Network. Now, here's what you want to do. You go to proxpn.com/twit. There's a lot more information there. You can sign up for ProXPN. The premium accounts are normally $9.95 a month. That's $74.95 for a whole year. Here's a special offer. Use the code HN20. You'll get 20% off for the lifetime of your account. No, not just the first month, for the lifetime. The lifetime of the account. That's less than $5 a month on the yearly plan for complete and total privacy on the internet. And if you're not satisfied, you can cancel within 7 days for a full refund. Here it is, proxpn.com/twit. And sign up. The code you want is HN20. It's proxpn.com/twit. Sign up code HN20. And we love ProXPN for their support of Ham Nation. Thank you very much. Bob, back to you.
See, Bob is speechless after that, Don.
He's muted. He's muted.
Here we go. I took lessons from Dale. Okay. No, we've got to really look at this pro thing because it's getting really ridiculous the way things are happening today, and that's a really great product. So let's all look into it and see what happens from there. But Don, I appreciate you telling us about that, and we'll look forward to trying that out. And what other news is happening around the world in amateur radio, Don? Let's see what's going on with Newsline.
We can do that, or we can go to Dale, whatever you want to do. If we want to do Newsline, we can do Newsline, or we can go to Dale, whatever you want to do.
Okay. Well, hey, let's do that. Before we go, Dale's got the video first. Let's do that. Dale, let's see what's going on in the video world tonight. You got some good stuff, man.
I sure do. We'll check it out, and we'll jump right into the videos here this evening and continue the series we started last week about building a 6-meter Yagi. We got a lot of nice feedback for the planning segment that George did last week on the post-show nets. So tonight we're going to show you how to build that 6-meter Yagi. And to do the honors, here's George Huffman, Kilowatt Delta 4 Mike X-Ray Alpha. Take it away, George.
Hello, everyone. George here, KD4MXA. Last week, we started the planning phase of building a 5-element, 6-meter loop-fed antenna. This week, we will begin construction. The first step is to lay out all of the element locations onto the boom and then cut the boom to its final length. My boom is 24 feet long and is a little hard to move around the shop, but having cut booms too short in the past, I still normally leave it long and cut it to its final length after I am sure of the element layout. An old woodworker once told me, "You haven't cut it wrong till you cut it too short." And those words still ring true 20 years later. First, we will mark a center line down the entire length of the boom material. I use a scribe or a pencil and a square and just guide it down its entire length. Next, we will lay out the placement of the elements. Don't forget to start your first measurement a couple inches from the end of the boom. What I normally do is add 2 inches to the element layout. Then I lay out the entire length of the boom. This first mark will be the hole position for one of the mounting holes in the element clamp. Then I either use a pair of dividers and mark the second hole, or I add the spacing measurements of the second hole in the element clamp and the layout the boom again. After the layout is complete, double and triple check your measurements. Do not drill holes in the boom until you are 100% sure of their positions. Next, we will add spacers to the side of the boom at the driven element position. There are 2 clamps spaced here, and these pieces are used to support the driven element clamps. I will show later why these clamps need spacing. I usually just cut short lengths from the boom material and attach them to the sides of the boom at the driven element position. After we have marked the layout of the boom, it is time to drill the holes for the element clamps. I am going to use the drill and tap method to hold the element clamps. I did a little destructive testing and feel that the 1/8-inch thick boom will hold just fine. If later I find the element clamps are coming loose, I will re-drill them and use the inserts or rivet nuts as mentioned in the first video. After we have drilled and tapped all of the holes, we will attach all of the 1/2-inch tubing to the boom, except for the driven part of the loop element. When attaching the elements to the boom, make sure they are centered and squared to the boom. Next, we need to attach the driven element to the boom. This element needs to be cut in half and about 10 millimeter space left between the 2 cut pieces. We will simply take a 6-foot piece of the 1/2-inch tubing and cut it in half. A simple fiberglass dowel is cut as an insulating spacer to hold the position of the driven element. This fiberglass dowel is simply an electric fence post picked up from a local farm supply store. We also need to drill and insert nuts and bolts to have an attachment point for our coax. After this step, we can cut 4 pieces of 3/8-inch tubing in half and insert them into the reflector and the director elements. I usually use a piece of black tape to temporarily hold these elements in place until we can test the antenna and then permanently attach them with worm clamps or rivets. Next, we will bend the loop sections of the driven element. A simple tubing bender is sufficient to bend 3/8 inch tubing. I usually mark the center section of the tubing to be bent and eyeball its position on the boom, and then bend 1/2 of the element. Then, holding its position on the boom, I will put the bender in position and mark the tubing where it needs to be bent. After the bend is complete, we double check it, bend another one, and temporarily insert them into position held with black tape. Now is a good chance to step back and admire your work. We are almost done. Next, we need to get the coax ready to attach to the driven element. I made a fixture to help me in preparing this. It is just 2 threaded rods long enough to hold the ring terminals spaced the same width apart as the driven element attachment points. This helps in getting the tape wrapped around the bare wire without having to maneuver around elements and booms. Now that the coax is attached, we need to test it and see how we did. I will see you next week when we mount the antenna on a test tower and begin final tuning. We will also make and install the antenna ballon. Until then, this is George, KD4MXA, 73.
Cover that installation. How'd you like all the tricks he showed you about holding the coax and things like that? Really nice tutorial there, George, and we look forward to it next week. Next, we have a timely piece from Dan, N9LVS, the wiki editor here at Ham Nation. He's just back from the Experimental Aircraft Association's Air Venture 2013 in Oshkosh, Wisconsin. More than 100 hams visited the special event at W9L, and it seems like ham radio and pilots go hand in hand. Brian has put up a picture that we were going to show after the video, so let's explain that. That's Kevin Young holding up his certificate for the 100 broadcast. We thought you'd like to see what you can do with the QSL cards from the special event stations and the special certificate we did for you during the celebration of the 100th broadcast there a while back. So that was Kevin Young. He's Kilo Charlie 7 Foxtrot Papa Foxtrot. He lives down in Florida. That about explains the picture, but let's go ahead and take a look now at Dan's video. Go ahead.
Aircraft conventions in the world, with 800,000 to a million attendees every year during the 8-day event. To get a perspective on how large of an event this actually is, EAA grounds cover approximately 1 mile by 2.5 miles. Anything that flies can be found at Air Venture, including the ornithopter, a flying car, P-51s, and yes, even Fifi made an appearance, as well as home builds, which are the root of Air Venture and the Experimental Aircraft Association. Every year, the Foxy's Amateur Radio Club does a special event station at Air Venture. It's located near the Pioneer Airport, just behind the EAA Museum. The special event station is part of KidVenture, which teaches kids and adults about aviation and facets of technology. AB9AH, to the right on this picture, is a special event station coordinator. And Rick, W9RIC, to the left, is one of the guys that makes sure that all the electronics stay working. In the old shack, you can find old operating equipment used from World War II and Korea, as well as teletype machines and old typewriters. During Air Venture, we use it for one of the locations for the special event station. The outside station is Station 2 and is kept under a canopy. This allows passerbys to see a closer look at what ham radio is all about. Antennas of all facets are used to get the most amount of coverage on the HF bands. Everything from dipoles to verticals, as well as slopers, and even a disc cone is used for VHF and UHF. And a quick little note, over the years, in Camp Scholler, on EAA grounds, more and more ham radio operators are setting up during the convention. Hope to see you at Air Venture 2014, July 28th to August 3rd.
Thanks, Dan. That's a great job. When I worked at Freedom System Integrators here in Wichita, my boss didn't miss that event. He went every year without fail. Quite a show they put on there, and it was nice to have the ham special event station there also. Speaking of Dan, though, he just finished putting version one of www.hamnationvideos.info on the air. I think Brian will show you a look at that, let you take a look. I just finished drafting the information for the site over the weekend and activated the demand and hosting service Monday, and Dan had the site on the air almost immediately. We appreciate that, Dan. And we'll be adding many features to this site in the near future, so do keep it bookmarked. We hope to put links to all the videos we've shown and the ones we've been unable to show. And speaking of sites, I tried to teach myself Dreamweaver over the weekend. That was quite an experience. And I did activate www.k0hyd.info, though. So you might take a look at that if you get a chance. And we had quite a few photos this evening. Well, we had one photo. But speaking of those photos, we've received quite a few during the past week or two. And we hope to put together a presentation and show them all at the same time here in a couple of weeks, probably right after we finish the three-part series with George and the six-meter Yagi. Next week, along with George's final installment, we'll feature another young group of hams in action. And that video came to us courtesy of Dave. He's Victor Echo 3, Oscar Oscar India. So look out for that next week. And that about wraps it up from the Yellow Brick Road here this evening, 7-3. And Don, the airways are yours.
Thank you, Dale. I appreciate that. Very good. I really enjoyed seeing the four special event QSL cards and the certificate shadow-boxed more or less, or matted and framed. I'm definitely going to have to do that myself. That's a great idea. You know, almost as much fun as chasing special events are QSO parties. And I tell you what's a lot of fun is the D-Star QSO party. It's coming up in September. ICOM America and ICOM Canada are teaming up for the D-Star QSO party, and here's more information on that. Roll the video.
ICOM America and ICOM Canada are teaming up to offer ham radio operators some incredible savings. With the D-Star QSO party just around the corner, you can get a great deal on a D-Star repeater direct from ICOM and help expand D-Star across North America. For a limited time, ICOM is offering two direct buy promotions for D-Star enthusiasts in the U.S. and Canada. Purchase a D-Star repeater through the D-Star infrastructure program. The growth of D-Star over the past 4 years has been incredible with the release of the ID-51A and the IC-7100. More people are getting on the air with its incredible mode. In response to the request to make the infrastructure more affordable, ICOM America and ICOM Canada are teaming up to expand the number of repeaters. And now through September 30th of 2013, IC7100 operators can get CS7100 cloning software at a discounted price with shipping and handling fees included. Visit ICOM America's website and click on the Buy Direct banners in the Amateur section. Look for the D-Star or CS7100 offers for complete details and instructions. Download the mail order form, fill it out, and mail it in. And don't forget to mark your calendars. D-Star QSO Party 2013 is coming up next month, September 20th through 22nd. Here's your invitation to the biggest D-Star QSO Party. Talk to the world by connecting through D-Star repeaters around the globe. 10 lucky winners are going to take home some great prizes this year. Get your gear now and be ready for the biggest D-Star party in the world. Visit icomamerica.com/amateur for more information on ICOM's Buy Direct program.
Isn't that awesome? I can't wait for the D-Star QSO party. That's going to be amazing. Visit icomamerica.com/hamnation. You'll find out a lot more information on the ICOM Buy It Now program. while you're there. Enter the Icon Weekly drawing for the swag, like the T-shirts and the hats and stuff. And don't forget to check out the details on ICOM's monthly grand prize drawing for a free ICOM radio. ICOMAmerica.com/hamnation. All the official rules are there. You can check out all of ICOM's previous drawing winners. You can sign up. And good luck. And you could win the radio. And George, W5JDX, has info on that. And George, you know what the grand prize or one of the grand prizes is going to be this weekend at the Huntsville Hamfest, right? It's the 7100. Yeah, they're giving one away. George, you there? Pick it up.
Yeah, Don, I just got here, so let me get settled in. Oh, yeah, the grand prize for this month is going to be the same prize we had last month, and that's a new ID51A VHF UHF dual-band transceiver with D-Star. It's going to be a great prize. Go enter after this episode of Ham Nation and every episode of Ham Nation and get your name in the hat and possibly win some swag and maybe this great handy talkie. Don, what's in the news tonight?
There's all kinds of stuff in the news. We've got a familiar face in the news. Let's go ahead and roll that, please. From Amateur Radio Newsline Report, number 1878, these are the Ham Nation headlines for Wednesday, August 14th, 2013. According to measurements from NASA-supported observatories, the sun's vast magnetic field is about to turn over. Amateur Radio Newsline's Heather Emby, KB3 TZD.
The sun's magnetic field changes polarity approximately every 11 years. It happens at the peak of each solar cycle as our home star's inner magnetic field generator reorganizes itself, signaling the midpoint of a solar cycle. Todd Hoeksema, the director of Stanford's Wilcox Solar Observatory, says that we are no more than 3 to 4 months away from a complete field reversal and that this change will have ripple effects throughout the solar system. As the field reversal approaches, data from the Wilcox Solar Observatory shows that the sun's two hemispheres are out of sync. The sun's north pole has already changed sign, while the south pole is racing to catch up. Soon both poles will be reversed, and the second or downhill half of the solar max will be underway. For ham radio, it likely means that good DX openings, especially on the higher bands, could be fewer and far in between.
There's a lot more to Heather's report, and you can hear it all right now in the full Amateur Radio Newsline report. A follow-up to last week's story on the destruction of the Rocky Ridge radio tower east of San Francisco. Jim Davis, W2JKD.
The ham radio system on that tower belonged to the Mount Diablo Amateur Radio Club and was heavily trafficked on 144.390 MHz packet radio and the APRS digipeater. Jim Siemens, AF6PU, is the spokesman for the group. He says that the club's repeater committee has decided to move the digipeater, and the results were amazing.
WA6JU was able to get into the vault at Rocky Ridge and retrieve all our digipeater gear. A group of us met to go up to the north peak of Mount Diablo to set up ATV gear. And while we were up there, Trevor was able to install and get up and running the digipeater. And the great news is that because of its higher vantage point, we are covering now almost 150 miles all the way around.
According to AF6PU, the new site should offer packet and APRS coverage to the majority of hams in Northern California.
Meantime, police are still asking for the public's assistance in finding the person or persons responsible for this act of vandalism. If you have any information that might help, please contact investigators at area code 510-881-1833. A Japanese HT-4 cargo vessel carrying the new ham TV gear was successfully launched to the International Space Station Saturday, August 3rd. Once activated, the primary mission of ham TV is to perform contacts between the astronauts on the ISS and school students by adding real-time video to the current voice-only QSOs within the ARIS program. The European Space Agency's Columbus module on the ISS will host the 2.4 gigahertz video transmitting station in addition to the existing 2-meter FM amateur radio station. The new equipment can broadcast images from the ISS during the school contacts or downlink other pre-recorded video images up to 24 hours a day. The IARU Amateur Satellite Frequency Coordination Panel has announced frequencies of 2422 MHz and 2437 MHz for use by the Ham TV project. It's currently planning to transmit using the DVB-S signal format with 10 watts of power. And last week, we had news of Art Bell, W6OBB, coming out of retirement. Now news that the man who is possibly the world's best-known ham radio instructor says that he's not going to retire either.
That's right. Gordo is not retiring from teaching, but rather I'm teaching Elmers and instructors and Scout Radio Merit Badge leaders how to do a ham radio class similar to the classes that I've done in the past for the past 44 years.
Of course, that's Gordon West, WB6NOA, who earlier this year had hinted that a change was coming in his life, and many saw that as a hint that he'd be pulling the plug. But West says he feels that it's time to take his years of accumulated knowledge and pass it on to the next generation of instructors.
Teaching the teachers was a decision that I made when I saw that class sizes were continuing to remain strong, and I had other Elmers come over and sort of monitor, and then their classes blossomed. So I thought, why not teach the teachers and get more classes throughout the local area here in Southern Cal, as well as when I travel throughout the country, growing with some of the techniques I use. So beginning officially now, I'm going to be training the trainers rather than actually presenting classes for students. Then I'll take this same technique and this same seminar, make it shorter, and present seminars at PacificCon coming up in October, the Midwest Convention in November, and other ham shows throughout the country, where I'll put on an hour or so on training the trainers.
More information on Gordon West's plan to train the next generation of ham radio educators can be found on his website at www.gordonwestradioschool.com.
And that's all from the Amateur Radio Newsline, your independent source for amateur radio news, brought to you each and every week for 35 years and counting at www.arnewsline.org. I'm Don Wilbanks, AE5DW 73. Hold the pickles, and we'll see you next time here on Ham Nation. And on that video, you saw Gordon at a radio station, at a ham station before the pickle segment. That was on the set of Last Man Standing, the ABC TV show. And John Amadeo, who is the producer, has just released a video from Dayton Hamvention talking about that. And it's kind of a long, convoluted URL, but we'll have that in the show notes in the Ham Nation Wiki. You can go find that, or if you just go to just go to YouTube and type in Dayton Hamvention, John Amadeo, or search for it. You'll find it. I believe it's on the ICOM America channel on YouTube, so you'll find that there. And George, I think there we go. That's the one right there. Search for that, bringing amateur radio to primetime network television, and you'll find that, and that's on the ICOM America YouTube channel. And George, I wonder if your tuner in the Smoke and Solder project tonight. I wonder just exactly where we can tune up that dual pickle array. Where do you think we can get? What frequency do you think we can get on that on?
You know, I'm not sure if it's rated for pickles or if they have to be dill or sweet or what type you can use there. I'll have to check with Gordo to learn a little more about that.
Oh, kosher only. Kosher only.
Oh, kosher. You're right.
Has to be kosher. That's right.
We wouldn't want any accidents here.
No.
Well, we're going to finish that tuner tonight and actually build the tuning network in it. So let's take a look at that.
Last week on Smoke and Solder, we began building the MFJ941EK HF antenna tuner kit. We built the RF switching assembly and the meter assembly. This week, we're going to complete the tuner by building the T-network.
We'll mount the inductor and switch assembly. And we want to hold the switch so that it doesn't turn when we do this. And now we've got two mounts down in here to line up with those two holes and put our screws through to mount this down. We'll want to mount the capacitors, and these are isolated from the chassis as well. All right, so the first thing I'm going to do, I think it's going to be easier if I put this fiber washer up in the hole before I put the capacitor in. And now I'll put the capacitor with the fiber washer in. And now I'll put another one of the 3/4-inch fiber washers on. And then a metal washer, and then the nut. Now, we do the same thing with the antenna capacitor. But this time, we're going to use the Teflon washers. Now I'm going to look carefully to make sure that none of these plates are touching each other. This one here on the end got kind of bent a little bit, so I straightened it back out. Now the top coil here has been isolated from all the rest, and they've given us a couple of leads here. What we're going to do is pull these out and away from the front post here. Now, this post right here is the stator of the capacitor, and we should attach this wire to it. The wire is just a little bit too short, so I'll just make a little jumper to fit that on over. Now we'll do the same thing on this side with the wire that's connected to C1. Once again, we'll check to make sure we're not shorted against that turn there. The wire coming off of C2 here has got to go right here to the rotor on the tuning capacitor. Now, we need to install another bus wire from the rotor here of the antenna capacitor up onto the center of the coil here on the top winding. Now, I'm not going to wrap it around because those windings are pretty tight there, and I could short out to the one below. Now let's see if that's good and tight there. And nothing shorted out. Now we've got one final connection to make here, and that goes from the looped end at the top of the inductor coil here onto the stator of the transmitter capacitor. Everything looks good. I don't see any shorts on any of the capacitor plates here that are obvious or the inductor windings. And so we can complete the kit. We've just got a few pieces left to go here. Now, this is mostly hardware stuff. We need to put this link coupler onto the end of the switch here. That's all the way to the left. And so we want that to point at dummy load. Balance line, coax 1, coax 2, coax 2 bypass, coax 1, balance line, dummy load. So I believe we're good there. Fully mesh the transmitter capacitor and fully mesh the antenna capacitors. That means we'll close them all the way to where they're all the way together there. Install the knobs with the pointers at 0. Now we need to find the home position of the selector switch here. So we'll put the knob on there temporarily so we can switch it around. So the way that we can tell when we're at the home position or open position is look at the rear of the switch wafer, and the wiper ring and selector tab should be aligned. There's the wiper tab right here. It goes on over to the ring in the center here. And the selector tab is currently on this position. If you watch when I turn it here, you'll see that little silver tab stick out the side there. That should be lined up with the selector tab. Now we're at a known position, and we should turn our knob here to position A. Now we got two buttons left here. The red one goes on the lamp on off, and the black one goes on our power range switch here. We'll install the cover on the unit later after we've done some testing and calibration. Now let's take a look at the schematic and see what we've built. The section in white here is what we built last week. Here's the input to the tuner and the directional coupler. The directional coupler is essentially a center tap transformer. The forward and reflected signals are induced into the windings of the transformer. Here's a reflected meter circuit. We can see that diode D1 rectifies the RF signal into a DC voltage. Capacitor C7 just smooths off the ripple. Resistor R3 reduces the level a little bit. And half of switch 2 selects between two potentiometers that are used to calibrate the 6 and 60 watt ranges. The other half of the meter circuit is essentially the same, but for the forward meter. If we look at switch 3, that's the antenna selector, and we can see the top positions of the switch are the bypass mode that simply route the RF straight through to the coax and outputs. The bottom half of the switch routes the signal through the T network. And here's the balance line balun and the meter lamp circuit. The T-network is two capacitors in series with the RF signal, and in between the two is a switched inductor that goes to ground. So here we can vary either capacitor or the inductance of the inductor to adjust the antenna tuning. Now that we've got the tuner complete, next week we'll do the testing and calibration of the unit. If you'd like to build along with us at home, Go to mfjenterprises.com and look up the MFJ 941 EK kit. And that's been a lot of fun to build. We'll test it out, and there's some unique procedures they used in there that I was not familiar with, so you'll want to check that out for sure. Now, last week I asked a question. If an antenna tuner has three components, what design is it most likely to be? And I got the correct answer from Larry, WD0AKX, and he said, I'll say it's a T-network. You're correct, Larry. Congratulations. You're going to win a copy of Jerry Buston's Constructing HF Wire Antennas book. And if you were paying attention, T-network is what was in this tuner that we just built. Now, for next week, I've got another antenna tuner-related question. If an antenna tuner has two components in it, what is it most likely to be? What name would you use for that? If you think you know the answer, give me an email at hamnationcontest@gmail.com, and you could be the winner. And what are you going to win? Well, only people with size 10 feet should enter this contest because I've got a pair of Howl Sound high-top Converse tennis shoes here. And so you lucky size 10 guys out there, throw your name in the hat. Tell me what a two-component tuner would typically be called. And you could win it. And please include your shoe size on the email. No, not really. Well, before we move on, a couple of things I wanted to mention here real quick is, yes, I will be at Huntsville. Tommy and I are going to be over there Saturday and Sunday this weekend, August 17th and 18th. We'll be shooting some video and having a good time and looking for some great deals. And also, we just put out Amateur Logic 57, where Tommy built a DVAP D-Star hotspot. It's a real neat little device that if you're into D-Star, you might want to check this out. It's got some a lot of capabilities. Basically, he can carry a D-Star repeater with him wherever he goes. So that was a neat project. And also, I did some repair work on a Kenwood TS-2000, and it had a really noisy receiver in it. And you might want to look at that, especially if you got one of those rigs, and you may have experienced this problem, and here's how you would fix it. Bob, size 10, you know, these will fit me.
Yes. Well, I guess we're going to have to see if we can't procure some more. You see, we make those for the front of the house engineers that do sound for all these famous rock and roll bands, and all those guys are huge guys because they carry big boxes around. So that's why the size 10 that you have.
Well, that's good. Yeah. So most sound engineers have larger feet.
Oh, well, they got to carry those big boxes. We'll have to fix something, and we'll make it happen. Converse.com, you can get whatever you need there, too, by the way. Hey, that was great. The tuner's super. So we'll look forward to getting that on the air next week. You're going to do that, right? Check her out next week?
Yes, I am. We'll be looking at it next week, how to calibrate the meter on it, the whole nine yards there. So that'll be a lot of fun.
Yeah, then we're going to have to get into this scope project and help these guys put these scopes together. So main thing is go out and buy a scope, right?
Yep, that's the first step. And I would say get at least 100 megahertz if you can.
Yeah, you can buy 100 megs for usually under $100 today. They're really getting inexpensive, don't you find?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, 20 years ago, oscilloscope would be a major purchase, but with all the ones on the surplus market now, you can find some great deals out there. And get a Tektronix or an HP would be okay, maybe even a Leader.
Yeah, it's good enough for what we're doing here, that's for sure. But we're going to have to get into showing him what all kinds of things we can do. Well, it's a great stuff you're doing, and I guess it's time to go find out what's happening in the chat room, and we have a very important person to do that. So let's move north up into Illinois and see what Cheryl's got doing. What's going on up there, Cheryl?
Hi there, Bob. How are you doing tonight? So good to see you. And hello to Gordo and Don and George. And great job, Dale. You did a wonderful job. It's doing great up here. And we've had some activity in the chat room and everything. But you know what I thought was so nice that we had somebody just 2 hours, 1 hour ago, so it's probably an hour and a half by now, they just passed their general. And that was KC0EDO/AG. A big congratulations on your general class license. Hope you have a great time on the HF bands and many more years to come and keep up the good work. And I had to get that out there because that was kind of exciting as it just was breaking news here in our own very own chat room. So all I wanted to say, isn't that nice that I think that I get so many comments like you do, Bob, that we inspire people to get their licenses and they want to go on and welcome everybody in the chat room. Nice to see all you guys too. And the podcasters, I know you hear us too. So welcome aboard. And we love to have you as our audience. It's so great. Anyways, I had to just comment. So there's so many things going on with that antenna that is called the dual array pickle antenna. And then one of our chat roomers, N2FYE Andy, he said, the compasses will stop working. It's the Gordon West dual pickle array antenna. And I have to say, Gordo, we had so many comments in there. I had to pass along some of them. He says, Gordo, how does the International Pickle Alliance feel about these abuses with your antenna, all these comments? How do you deal with all that stuff? Go ahead. Well,
we made sure that we ID'd in case Riley was still out there monitoring. And at 60 hertz, we don't think we go very far. Back to you, Cheryl.
Great. And chat rumor, we have Scott. He said he is NT5SM. He says, Gordo, you helped my 10-year-old daughter get her ticket. Many thanks. And we all thank you for helping us throughout all the time you put in. And it's just a great thing that you got the blue ribbon. And it was so good to see you and Susie and everything else that went on there. And I wanted to personally, we have K9BIK who says, thank you so very much for your kind B-Day email. It was very much appreciated. You were my very first B-Day greeting. I wanted you to know that. I did not reply yet. So I thought I'd do that in person. And, you know, one thing I have a question of myself, because it came from one of the chat roomers. It was Bill, and it was KF5FEI, Bill. He says, they have made barbed wire antennas. Is that true, Gordo?
Oh, sure. Yeah, barbed wire many times is not grounded, or maybe grounded at the far end. And, wow, for 160 meters, yahoo, on a barbed wire antenna.
Wow, that's really something else. It really, truly is. So I also wanted to give a comment out here that Ray N9JA from ICOM says he was talking to NT9E Dave out there, and he says, you know, you might want to check out this link about the HF D-Star net. And I thought that was really, really neat, so I'm just going to say it. And I hope that I say it clearly enough so we all get it. But it's the HF D-Star net. It's a link for the internet. And he says it's www.dstarinfo.com/dstarhfnet.aspx. So that might be something of interest you could check out if you're into the HF portion of a D-Star net. So check that out. It sounded really good. And moving on to one of the questions here, we have a Web4987. He says he had a quick question. What's the best way to watch Ham Nation live? And if you were listening only to the podcast and you wanted to get in here, he says that, you know, what's the best way? He watched a lot of archives. It's just really a little bit before 8 o'clock p.m. Central Time. Depends on what part of the country you're in. Central Time here in the Midwest, it would be 8 p.m. A little bit before then, you'd want to just type into your browser, live.twit.tv, and there we will be, right there in front of your eyes. And there's some different choices on the bottom there that you can pick for dependent upon the speed that you have for your internet service. And that's basically how you get into our live show. And I wanted to just quick share that. And we have one for you, Bob, K9EID. It's from Clayton. He says, he is KB0WZI. He says, I'd like to ask Bob, where can we order his new book? Thanks. Go ahead.
All the dealers have them. You can go to just about any of the dealers, and they do have the book, and it's available and doing well. And I'm getting so many emails from guys that have gotten the book and learning a lot. And that's my goal, is to help people learn more about this great hobby. And most of the things in there I've saved all these many years, and that's how I learned it. So continue on, and you'll love what you read in the book. But all the dealers have it, so check them out.
Excellent. Good to know. I definitely would recommend it. It's got some really nice things in there. So I've heard. I have yet to get my very own copy. I definitely want to pick one of those up. And I have a little note here just from my engineer that always sets everything up here. He says sometimes if you go into your Skype settings, it goes back on by default to autofocus. It's checked on. And if you uncheck it, sometimes you get a little better video out of it. So you might want to do that each and every time. So that's basically what he's trying to say here. He's waving his hands at me. So I don't know if he had anything else that he had to say. Turn on autofocus. He's not turn off. I'm sorry. It was turn on. I guess I needed yeah. to put my contacts in. It's turn on autofocus. I'm sorry. Oops. All right. I can make a mistake now and then. I'm only human here anyways. Let's see. And... this is for you, George. If you were out there, are you there with us right now, George?
I am here, Cheryl.
Excellent. Good evening to you first. And Sean says, KD7UJR, this is a question here. For a person who has never soldered before, what may be a good project to start learning on without risking too much investment?
Oh, what do you think? Gee, that's a good question. You might try some connectors. Some different, not a PL259, I wouldn't start with that, but maybe some audio connectors like a phone plug, something like that. You can get a little soldering practice kit from MFJ. I don't remember the number of it, but they have a little solder practice kit where they give you a PC board and some various components and stuff and kind of step you through the techniques. That's a good little training aid as well.
Oh, good. Excellent. Well, everybody wants to know best kit. And how about just to add on to that, what would be a first good soldering, a basic one that doesn't cost that much without getting too detailed? What do you think is just a good starter soldering iron there, George? How many watts and stuff?
Probably go 30 or 40 watts for an iron. I use this Weller WLC100 here. I think Bob uses it too. Just about everybody I know has one of these. It's a soldering station, which basically it's a 40-watt soldering iron, but it's got a variable temperature control here, so you can turn it up really hot if you've got something big or back it back down for PC boards. You can get a wide assortment of tips that will fit it. That's the one I normally recommend. There are others around, but, I mean, this thing is less than $50, and it's pretty nice for that price. Basically works as good as the $250 one I used to use. So that's my recommendation. But you can go a little cheaper. Just be careful that you can get replacement tips for whatever you get.
Oh. Well,
here you go,
nice
right
know.
Here.
Excellent.
Here you are,
excellent.
Right here. I love my little Willer.
Wow.
What I like about it, as you said, George, is I can make it real hot or real cold, and different tips. You can get real small ones. This one I had on because I was soldering up that scope box a while ago. So this stuff is great. One thing that I find, there's a company in St. Louis, Gateway Electronics. Look up their website sometime. They've got all kinds of stuff, but they've got some kits. And one of the things I like to do, George, when people ask me that question, I like to do something that after you make this kit, it works. They've got some really cool audio oscillators. They've got audio amplifiers. You can plug your output of your phone into and drive a bigger speaker. They've got some very cool things such as code oscillators. And they're really inexpensive. Gateway Electronics, they got a whole bunch of that stuff. You might want to look at that. And I think you would agree that there's a great satisfaction of building something and it works, right?
Oh, it definitely is. And if it doesn't work, then you get to learn about troubleshooting. But one other point I want to make on choosing a soldering iron there, Radio Shack used to sell some pretty decent ones. They were Unger is actually who manufactured them. But the selection that I see in there today, I'm not real happy with those. They probably work, but I'm not liking what I'm seeing there. So you might look elsewhere.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. Last time I was at R&L, they had the little red box, and the Weller is really great. So maybe that would be a place. And I think Lisa has them at Gateway Electronics also. So it's all just fun stuff, and we appreciate you sharing all this with us, Cheryl, and helping answer some of the chat room. So thanks a lot from Northern Illinois.
Thanks, Bob. You know, I was just curious, is there a difference between the red Weller versus the blue one? I'm used to seeing blue until you held up that brilliant red one. Is there a difference? Is it a difference in the model or what? I'm just curious.
Oh, yeah. Red is always faster.
And cheaper.
Well, there you go. Right. And I have one last question I gotta put out there to for Gordo. It's for you. KD7, UJR Sean. He says, do you know of any D-Star stations in Montana, per chance? Is there something that sticks out in Montana, or does he just have to get in with a DV dongle, or what do you think, Gordo?
I would probably go to the ICOM homepage and look at the D-Star, and they've got a menu that lists them all over the country, It would not surprise me if they didn't have one or two that'll work in that area. So go to the ICOM homepage and go to D-Star, and then take a look at all of the stations on the air.
Oh, great. Wonderful. And I just wanted to say that I had a very nice dual-band radio, which I'm going to buy another one of. It happens to be an ICOM, and it's an ICOM 2820H, which is D-Star capable, and it's dual-band. So it makes it a lot of fun. So you can do VHF, UHF, D-Star, fun in the car, fun at home, one for each. I don't know. I just thought it was a great rig because I think D-Star is really a lot of fun, too. It sounds kind of just like having a cellular telephone conversation. It's just that clear if you haven't been on it yet. Anyway, so there's always something to look forward to. And we thank you so much for joining us today in the chat room. And we always try to get in all your questions. Keep them coming. You know, we want to answer those things for you. And once again, thank you to Bob. Thank you to Gordo. And congratulations, Gordo. Thank you to Don Wilbanks, who does a great job. And, of course, our very own Smoke and Solder, George. And our new person, Dale Puckett's doing a really great job for us. Thanks, everybody. And we'll see you next time on Ham Nation 73. And I'll be on 3847 for the After Show QSO with you. Take care.
Okay, maybe the new general, KD0 EDO, will be with us on 3847. Hey, Gordo, before we leave, I really had a good time at the Albuquerque Ham Fest last Saturday, and it was neat that you were there, and it was cool. You were live. I was via Skype, and that worked out really well. So thanks for being there with me for a while.
Yeah, it was fun, and they really worked hard. This was a new venue, and anytime a Ham Fest goes to a new venue, there's always growing pains. But if there was any pains, I'll tell you, the Ham Group did not admit it, and they just made things happen. Thanks, Bob, for being there as well. And I think we're on 72 tonight.
Okay. We'll see you there. That's for sure. Yeah, we're doing a lot of club meetings. And any of you guys that belong to a club, why, contact Gordo, George, or I. Any one of us can, as we do right here, sitting in this chair and present some very useful things. And clubs really need it. They need some education. They need some entertainment. They need some excitement. And you can do that using Skype. Hey, it doesn't cost anything. So let us know. And when you're in Huntsville, be sure and look up the sign man. He's going to be there. He's the guy that's doing all of these, and you can bring on home your very own in any color. And be sure and check out W5KUB.com. Tom will have live stream the whole time. So, Don, you and George have to behave because we're going to be watching you on the live stream, okay? Yeah, they're not going to answer me because they know.
Yeah, W5KUB.com. You can see some live streaming video from Dayton.
Yeah, great. Okay, guys and girls, 7-3. We're going to wind this up. We'll see you here next week, Wednesday. And throughout the week, just put Ham Nation into Google. Put Ham Nation into Google. You don't have to worry about slash bars, dots, commas, Ham Nation into Google. boom, up it comes. All the 109 shows, and it'll be 110 with this one. And it hit the little red thing that says live, and at 8 o'clock Central on Penn State, you can see us live. We'll talk to you down the road, and we're headed out to 75, 40, and 20 meters. Thanks, everybody, for your great participation tonight. This is K9EID, and we're going to be heading out and up the van. 73, bye-bye for now.